This is God meeting with the people. They have an encounter marked with God. And let me tell you a story, what Pharaoh's thinking. This story about a cartoon somebody sent me on Facebook. And there's God on his throne of judgment. And in front of him is a dog and a cat. And God turns to the dog and says, "Well?" And the dog says, "I was a good dog. I was always obedient and loyal to my master." Okay. And God turns to the cat and says, "And you?" And the cat says, "You're sitting on my chair." And our encounter, this is what God brought the people of God through. The encounter is that we have Pharaoh who thinks he's an incarnation of the sun god Ra. And there's this pesky god of the Hebrews called Yahweh who keeps trying to take control of things. And as far as Pharaoh is concerned, Yahweh is sitting on his chair. But really, it's Pharaoh who's trying to sit on God's throne. And it's not going to work, is it? You know, to begin with, it's simply not going to work. And the way the Hebrew writer writes it in the Bible, I only discovered fairly recently, where he says, the Bible says, Pharaoh will think, "The Israelites are wandering round the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert." Actually, the Bible writer has put that in strict Hebrew poetic rhythm. And it doesn't translate into English. I did try. They're confronted in the land, the desert has them jammed. That's pretty rubbish, isn't it? But the point is, it struck me that the way the Bible writers have put it, Pharaoh is rapping in his chariot. This is gangster rap, ancient Egypt style. And I just imagine Pharaoh with a baseball hat the wrong way round, his jeans halfway down his backside and Nike trainers on his feet, rapping in his chariot about what he's going to do to the Israelites. Because that's the way it was written in the Bible. So Pharaoh is determined to get rid of this nasty god called Yahweh. And it's not going to work. If you go to verse 27 of that chapter, it says about the Lord swept them in the midst of the sea. And the Jewish Bible commentator I was reading on this, and Hebrew scholar, says that word, routed, is actually the same word that you would use for flicking a cockroach off the table. So the way it's been set up in the Bible is you've got Pharaoh rapping, doing gangster rap in his chariot about what he's going to do to God when he gets hold of him. And then we get God just going, thick, and Pharaoh is gone. The Bible is a theological essay in the form of a narrative. And Eugene Peterson says, "Stories invite us into a world larger than ourselves. We're storytelling people, and our lives are stories. They have a plot, they have intent, and they have other people. The Bible is the greatest story." So this whole thing is written as this fantastic story of the characters fighting and struggling. But what happens is the people of God escape. They have come through because they have an encounter marked. And if we go to chapter 19, verse 3 and 4 now, we'll see what God is saying to them. And this is a translator by the Jewish Bible commentator, Robert Alter. And this is his version of it. I bore you on the wings of eagles, and I have brought you to me. And now if you will truly heed my voice and keep my covenants, you will become for me a treasure among all peoples. For mine is all the earth, and as for you, you will become a kingdom of priests. God has carried them to this point because he wants to meet them in the desert. They've got a special meeting. They've got an appointment with God. And that's their destiny. Because in God's grace, in God's power, they've been called to meet with him. John Wesley, the great Methodist preacher, was carried out of a burning house when he was a baby. And for the rest of his life, he referred to himself as the brand plucked from the fire. He was always aware that, but by the grace of God, he would have died back as a baby. I mean, I was chatting to, we got a lovely minister in our association called Mark Young, who's pioneering on the west bank of Llandudno, West Shore. And his dad is a retired Baptist minister. And you can imagine, Irish retired Baptist, you can imagine what happens when he and I get together. They left church early to get home and bumped into me in the porch the other day they were visiting. So actually Mark and family got home before mum and dad because we were sitting there chatting in the crack was good, Martin, the crack was good. But we're of an age and we talk like old people do. And we're actually commenting to each other on this passage that if it wasn't for modern medicine, all three of us would have been dead by now. Actually, sobering thought, isn't it? And there's that sense in which this passage speaks to me that I'm here by God's grace. There are so many times in my life when I could have came close to a road accident. I got abducted at gunpoint in São Paulo. I crossed a bridge and I hadn't realized that as the water was washing the land away, my rear tire, half of it passed over the gap in the road that was being washed away. I wonder why people were applauding me till I stopped and asked them. If it wasn't for the grace of God, I wouldn't be here. But the point is that I'm here to encounter the Lord. That's my destiny, is to meet with God. I am his possession. And you can react to that in as many ways as you want. You can say, well, you know, I would have died, but God saved me. Or my life might have been wrecked, but God pardoned me and put me on my feet again. My life was a wreck, but God saved me. My life is a wreck, but please help me, please save me. You know, we could be saying all these kind of things. God carried me on eagle's wings. And I think that's what he's done. If I look back on my life, and I encourage you to do that. God has carried me here on eagle's wings. Why? To meet him. Because he really wants to meet me. God is really thrilled at the idea of meeting you and embracing you and blessing you. God enjoys that. God enjoys that. That's the whole point of the escape
out of Egypt. And he wants us as a special people. Later on, when the prophet Hosea will say, God says, when I found you, it was like finding grapes in the desert. Quite nice. I tried to upgrade that. I thought it's like finding McDonald's in the Sahara, but that really didn't work. So I'll leave you to invent your own translation of that. But it's like finding grapes in the desert, you know. God was so thrilled at meeting the people. Unfortunately, the people didn't quite live up to the encounter. That's another story for another time. You can read on in the Bible, find it doesn't necessarily have a happy ending. God had high expectations of them. And they failed him. But God really loves them. And then in verse 6, I think it's the most remarkable verse in the Old Testament. I'm sorry, Isaiah's great and Jesus everything, but I just find chapter 19, verse 6, which says, it comes completely by surprise, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Did you pick that up as I read it? He's destined them to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. To which I invite you to say, where in the Old Testament does that happen? And you're racking your brains, because it doesn't happen in the Old Testament. Not there at all. And the great verses of the Old Testament, you're going to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, and you're waiting, and it doesn't happen. Oh, they consecrate a few priests, but the nation doesn't become the kingdom of priests. If you want to find out where that happens, you've got to go to the New Testament. And the New Testament is very clear. It's happened now in Jesus, the Epistle of Peter, First Epistle of Peter, says, chapter 2, verse 9, you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession. And you think, where did Peter get that from? He got it from Exodus. He lifted it out of Exodus. He said, God promised it, and it's happened now. It has come to life. It's a reality. And we're called to stand and minister as priests. He's made a priest out of every one of us, just as he promised. You've got to go back. They're in the desert, you know? In the desert, they're all dusty, and they're all so whew, after escaping the Red Sea and everything, and they've been carried on eagle's wings, they're a brand plucked from the fire, and now God says, you're going to become a kingdom of priests. But then you've got to wait like 1,200 years for it to start to happen, but that's God's timing. But the point is that this is story. The whole Bible's a story of how God saves his people and turns you and me into a kingdom of priests. It tells us something, doesn't it, about the love of God? It tells us something about the image of God that some people have and how that's wrong. Some time ago, I came across this lovely story by a Baptist minister called Steve Chalk, who back in the day used to be on the radio a lot, on BBC. And he got involved in a discussion with a fellow presenter. And I love the way he responded. I pretty much have to read it. I can't really do a synopsis of this. So he's on BBC Radio 5 Live, Drive Time Show. He's going out live. And one of the stories the program was covering was on the issue of adultery. And as we chatted, the presenter chipped in, why is God so miserable? Why has he got such a down on everything we do? And then building to a real anti-God kind of rant, she said, don't do this, don't do that, don't commit adultery. It's pathetic. I interrupted her with a question, says Steve. Does it really say don't commit adultery? Yes, it does, came her rapey reply.
Well, I've never read that bit, he said.
You know very well it's in there, she retorted. It's in there twice. It's one of the Ten Commandments.
Oh, says Steve Chalk.
Now I know what you're talking about. It's just I didn't recognise it at first because of the tone of voice you were using. What do you mean? She said. Well, you're absolutely right, I continued. God does say that we shouldn't commit adultery, but not in the way you've read it. You see, before he gives any of the Ten Commandments, he introduces himself as the God who loves Israel. He lets them know that he wants the very best for them. God didn't sit in heaven making a list of all the things he knows human beings like to do and then outlawing them to spoil our fun. Rather, he knows the pain and heartache that we will cause ourselves and others if we pursue sins that are contrary to the way he made us to be. The Ten Commandments is a loving God saying, look, I am the God who loves you. I'm on your side. I got you out of slavery. I'm the best deal you've got going for me. Trust me. Don't abandon me. Don't do these sins, because if you do, it will unleash destructive powers that will slowly overshadow you. Trust me. Don't be stupid. The presenter looked at me in astonishment. Quietly, she said, well, no one's ever explained it that way to me. It makes so much sense. And within minutes, the phone lines were ringing. God is the God of love. He brings us to him, to meet him, to be blessed by him, to be encouraged by him, to be drawn into his kingdom. That's the God of Exodus, and he's quite something. Let's bow our heads and pray.